on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Thursday edition, February 26th of InvestTalk. And today I have with me Justin Klein.
As usual now on Thursdays.
Yes. Normally you're here on Thursdays. I do appreciate that. Mondays and Thursdays is your normal
thing. Got to help save your voice.
Yeah, as you can see, my voice are here. My voice is a little rough because I'm fighting a cold, so yeah. I apologize for that. Yeah. But I'll get through it. We'll all get through it. If you live here in California, the term lower oil prices has a slightly different feel because we're seeing slightly higher prices at the pump. Why is that? Well, First of all, we got a refinery that's local here in Southern California that kind of had a fire.
Yeah, they had a big, I think four people were injured.
Yeah.
And it was I think it was a Chevron,
ExxonMobil. Was it Exxon? Arco? I think it was Arco.
Was it Arco?
Anyways, and there's been a labor dispute here, mm-hmm. and it's the annual switchover for winter to summer blended gasoline here in California. Mm-hmm. And also, taxes went up. California increases taxes dramatically, and people are not noticing that because oil's been down, gasoline's been down, but California is increasing taxes on gasoline.
Was that put through before oil prices dropped?
Yes.
Okay. So.
Yes. So it's kind of hiding the impact.
Gotcha. And yeah, I mean, I noticed. I mean, gas prices now, well, they're much lower than they were 6 months ago. They're decently off the lows from a couple months ago.
Yeah. And, of course, there's one other reason that not too many people talk about, and that's the strength of the U.S. dollar. Mm-hmm. If the dollar goes up, which, remember, oil's traded around the world in U.S. dollars. If the dollar goes up in strength against other currencies, well, the oil prices will go down here in the United States, but not necessarily in other countries. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of factors that are tugging and pushing and pulling on oil and oil prices. Now, looking at supply, we have our oil stockpiles are at 80-year highs, according to data released Wednesday by the U.S. Energy Information Administration. Oil production hit a new weekly high of 9.3 million barrels a day here in the United States. 9.3. That's going to fall off pretty quickly, by the way, this year.
Yeah, it's not hitting it yet because the oil is still flowing, but there's been some wells that are being shut down.
The rig count is way down.
Yeah, because you got to remember when they have a rig, they still have on site. They have oil that's being scheduled to be shipped and moved right to places.
Yeah, it takes time.
So it takes time for that actual stopping sucking it out of the ground to it start to impact the supply, and that might take a few more months.
Yeah. So how is it going to impact you as an investor? Are there going to be opportunities or not? Well, that's what we're going to talk about on our March 19th, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time webinar. We hope you can make it. We'll try to take we'll take a full hour to track this issue down to really get in depth on it if we can. And, of course, there is going to be we decided to put a pretty decent question-answer period after the webinar. So yeah. Be ready with your questions.
Yeah, so you'll actually be able to see, when people call and ask questions on the show, and we're going through all the information and trying to give our opinion on that particular name, you'll be able to actually see what we're doing because we're sharing our screen. You're going to see what's on our desktop, and so you'll kind of get a better sense of what goes into it. Obviously, our method's quick and dirty. We do a lot more in-depth research, when we're in the office, but I think it'll be good insight for a lot of people.
So if you're interested, just click on the InvestTalk tab at the top of the page, InvestTalk with two T's, investtalk.com. And sign up. It's free. There's no charge. It's free. During this 1 hour, I hope you'll talk with me directly right now, Justin and I. Do you have a question for us? We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time right now. Our number is 888-99-CHART. It's time for a Q&A right now. Let's take the first question of the day on our 24-hour listener line.
Yeah, hi, this is Don from Endicott, New York. I'm a podcast listener. I have a question about my account. I trade on an online broker, and recently I've gotten a lot of dividend payouts, and I'm getting fees called sweeps. First of all, what are those, and how do they use them? They seem to coincide with my dividend payouts. Is it best to not have the dividends reinvested and just put into cash? Would that alleviate some of those, or am I going to get those no matter what from both the fund managers and the brokers? Just explain that, if you would, a little bit, and let us know how that works, and I'll be listening on the radio. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not quite understanding why you're getting charged a fee on a dividend, and you're saying it's called a sweep?
Yeah, and a sweep is just, you know, moving money from one account to another.
Yeah, that's what I'm familiar
with.
Yeah,
it sounds like maybe his excess cash is being moved into another account, and so he's getting a sweep.
Or maybe they're charging from going from cash to money market and money market back to cash?
Yeah, I mean, they shouldn't be charging you sweep fees. If they're charging you sweep fees, that sounds like one of those backdoor type of fees that they don't need. They don't tell you about.
Yeah.
That most brokers, I mean, our custodians for our clients, they don't charge sweep fees or anything like that.
I'd like him to call back and tell me which broker is doing that.
Yeah.
The online broker, who's doing that? Because
but you shouldn't put up with that.
No. That's an extra backdoor fee that's kind of sneaky, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So don't put up with it. Please
don't.
I
mean, you can do dividend reinvestment instead.
Yeah.
But I like to be in control of when my cash is
We like to have the dividends come into cash, and then we'll reinvest it ourselves wherever we want to instead of being automatic.
Exactly.
Investors are looking for companies that are creating social environment solutions, socially responsible impact investing. That's going to be our main talking point. And I kind of like it. I am not big on social investing, but the socially responsible impact investing, I kind of like it. I like that it's a free market solution to a public problem of one nature or another, one kind or another. We're going to talk about it. We'll get into it.
Yeah, it's pretty. I think it's very interesting, and it's not what most people think. You think of social investing. You know, there's social investing funds, right? Mutual funds and things like that. It's very different than that, and I think a lot of people will be interested to see how different areas of the marketplace are being addressed.
I also want to talk about deflation. You know, most people think deflation is good. Think about the oil prices. Isn't that good?
That's deflation.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about that and explore that a little bit.
Yeah.
I want to talk about durable goods report that came out today for January. The top line number was pretty impressive. But how about the underlying numbers in that same report? We're going to talk about that. And I still want to talk about Tesla's and Tesla's numbers. I mentioned yesterday before the show I wanted to talk about. Didn't get to it. I'm hoping to get to it today. So those are the things we're going to talk about. But, of course, you come first. You, whatever you want to talk about. What is on your mind? And today the market was mixed, and we've had a couple of mixed days. The Dow was down 11. The Nasdaq was up 21. The Nasdaq has been leading the charge.
Mm-hmm.
And the S&P was down 3. And it just looks like it's getting a little tired. There's not much gusto in the market, but the Nasdaq, we might have a Nasdaq year. It's hard, this might be the year for Nasdaq, because previously it's been all the big cap stocks the last few years.
Well, yesterday the Nasdaq was kind of hit a little bit because Apple had a rough day.
Yeah.
But yeah, overall, you know, the Nasdaq has been strong.
I think Apple, with that new Apple Watch when it comes out, Justin, I think it's gonna sweep the market again. I think they're gonna have a new. I think it's gonna be big.
I just hard for me. I don't think it's gonna be as big as you think.
I think it's gonna be big because it's not gonna be just another little app wearing on your wrist. I think it's more. It's gonna be, hey, this is a accessory. Why don't you get it in gold? Why don't you get it in platinum? Why don't you get it with some diamonds?
But are you going to buy a $1,000 gold watch for something that's going to be outdated technologically in 3-4 years?
Well, but look at, maybe you can keep.
How about this? I asked my friends, and I'm bashing Apple. We own Apple. We like Apple.
Yeah.
I own an iPhone. My computer at home is an Apple. I love Apple. But I asked my friends, what do you think? Are you going to get the iWatch? I haven't found one that's like, yes, I'm going to get the iWatch. Now, when it comes out and you see what it can do, and
I'm
going to
bet you a lunch. I'll bet you a lunch that it is much more successful than any other
watch. That's a very subjective. we need to have some numbers behind
that's
this.
That's why I'm going to win.
Because by your assessment, it's going to be successful. Well, I'm not saying it isn't going to be successful. I think it's still very up in the air.
Anyway.
They're doing an event, what, March?
I think so,
sometime in March.
Yeah, I don't know, Josh. It depends, of course, how useful it's going to be, and I think that's going to be a tough.
Yeah.
But it's more than just use. It's also a accessory, you know, like wearing a necklace or, you know, a watch. You wear a watch? Why do you wear a watch? And you got your cell phone.
Sometimes, but that's.
So now you got another watch to pick from. That's all.
Yeah, but this watch
is
going
to connect to your cell phone.
But it's going
to
be outdated in a few years.
So okay.
I just find it hard to spend extra money. Now, I would think about buying the basic one that just is functionality, doesn't have to be all fancy, and because then I can upgrade and I don't feel like I wasted extra money on it. You know what I mean?
Remember, you can register for a free webinar, the upside of lower oil prices, right there on investtalk.com. Mark your calendar for March 19th, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Time. Sign up now at investtalk.com. That's with two T's. Investtalk.com, right at the top of the page. 888-992-4278. Time to give us a call. What's on your mind? We'd love to talk to you. Let's talk about social impact investing. Not social investing, but social impact investing, which I kind of like. After I read about it, I was already geared up to say, I'm not going to like this. But this is a little bit different twist.
And it's very interesting because, you know, most people, when they think of social investing, it means I don't want to be involved in the sin stocks, alcohol and cigarettes,
weapons,
things like that. And that's traditionally what social investing is about. But this isn't about that. This is about curing things like poverty, homelessness, crime, addressing early child education, clean technology, etc.
And using venture capitalism to cure those problems, not just the government coughing up more money.
Yeah.
Which I kind of like. I think that's a real possibility that it could work.
Well, and New York just launched a bond. They designed a bond, and the goal of the bond is to cure recidivism, the recidivism problem that New York has, meaning the criminals that go into jails and they come out, they have a very high likelihood of going back to prison.
Right.
And the goal is to try to solve that problem. And there's people out there that think they know how to do that through an employment opportunity training, things like that. And if they succeed, they earn up to a 12.5% return.
And see,
Paid by the government.
If they succeed. If they don't, you've got a problem there with the company. But what it's using is private capital to solve the problem, to try to solve the problem, and then if it's successful, the government will pay. You know, because in the long run, it costs all the taxpayers less money. So
it's a great idea because there's how much risk is there on the government side? Not much.
There's just not. Not unless it's successful. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Pisa with Justin Klein. 888-99-CHART is our number. You can reach us right now. Your money topic is next on Invest Talk. I'm ready for any call about finances.
Invest Talk is all about above average investing for the average investor. How do you prepare your retirement plan for a volatile market? Talk about it now. 888-99-CHART. Our InvestTalk podcast distribution is made possible by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. InvestTalk is kind of a unique podcast because you can actually call and talk to the hosts. It's produced live between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific Time, Monday through Friday, and we'll answer the phone at 888-99-CHART. That's 888-992-4278. Can't call then? Do it another time, and we'll answer your recorded question on the next podcast.
888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Art in Menlo Park. He wants to talk about oil companies. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
Good. Thank you. I'm pretty good. I'm fighting a cold, but I'm doing pretty good.
Okay. I just wanted to get your take on, like, I'm actually thinking about picking up some, Exxon Mobil or Chevron versus, like, some drilling companies like Chesapeake or Occidental. I was just wondering, what are the, advantages or disadvantages of getting one or the other?
Well, you know, big integrated companies like Exxon and Chevron, they can weather a lower oil price much better than drillers.
Yeah, and okay. Essentially like Occidental Petroleum, they're really tied into the shale play, whereas Chevron and Exxon don't have a lot of exposure there, and their cost to drill are traditional, and those are usually a lot lower.
Yeah, so your big companies are probably a better bet at this stage than the drillers. I don't know if we've seen the fallout yet from all the drillers.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think it all depends on your risk level that you want to take. ExxonMobil and Exxon and Chevron, those are less risk. And Occidental and what was the other one you said? Conoco or I forget the other one you said. But companies like Occidental, Chesapeake, yeah, those are of a lot more volatility to them. So if oil prices rebound into the $70, $80 range, you're going to have a lot more upside with Occidental than you would over Chevron or Exxon. But if oil stays down here in the $40 to $60 range, then I think Chevron and Exxon will be a better play. They'll hold up much better.
Yeah, depends on how much risk you want. Art, thank you for the call. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks.
Let's go to Dan in San Diego. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, real good, Steve and Justin. How are you guys doing?
Okay? We're doing great. Thank you.
Hey, speaking of social impact investing,
yes,
I was wondering if you all had looked at the new neighbor we're going to acquire, Cuba. Is there any thoughts about investing in things that might be good for Cuba?
Well, Cuba, if that market opens up and when it is, it probably is more when than if,
Right.
There's going to be a lot of opportunities for investment there because those people haven't had anything. I mean, you still look at, they still have 1950 Chevys driving around.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, but yep. They're also very, very poor. It's a very, very poor country. I don't know for us, you and I, I'm not sure where the opportunities will be. I'm not sure, but there probably is a fund.
There is a fund.
There is an ETF.
Yeah, it's called the symbol is Cuba, but it is a broad based ETF. It's the Hertzfeld Caribbean Basin ETF. So you're getting exposure not just to Cuba but other countries in that region. Definitely Cuba is the most I would say leveraged to that area.
So that's probably the only method right now that you're going to be able to invest in it, that kind of ETF that might specialize in that area.
Okay. Well, thank you much.
Good luck, Dan. Appreciate the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Now, we all think about inflation and deflation. I'd like to talk a little bit about deflation because we've seen deflation hit us, and the obvious one is in oil prices. And most people, for the average person out there, you got to say, well, that's good. Lower oil, lower gasoline prices is good. That might be so. It might be so. But there's also other issues besides that. If you really want to know what deflation is like, in 1950, 1 minute conversation on a telephone in inflation adjusted dollars cost $36 a minute.
Wow.
Today, it's free.
Yeah, because the internet.
That's deflation, okay? And that's good. But think about the problems with deflation. Remember, Japan's had it for years and years and years and still fighting it. But this is the problem. There's several big problems that could come along. And one of them, the obvious problem is not to deal with gasoline because you have to get around, so you're going to buy gasoline. But what if deflation is on automobiles or everywhere else? Okay. And if you wait another month, it's going to be cheaper. You're going to probably, the consumer will slow down or stop buying because he knows every month something gets cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And what do you think that does to an economy? No, and spending shrinks. That is deflation. And that will cause a deflationary spike, and it causes a recession easily. But another problem that no one talks about or doesn't talk about very much, and that's the dangers of deflation when you're fighting a recession. Think about this. The Federal Reserve, what's the way that they try to get the economy to get back growing?
They lower interest rates. Which usually weakens the dollar
and sparks the economy. Mm-hmm. But if you have already super low inflation rates, how are you going to do that? Because of a deflation.
Super low interest rates is what you're saying.
Super low interest rates. Yeah. Right. Now you got to go to negative interest rates.
Well, that's what they do with QE. That's how they.
That's right. That's right. Look at Europe. They already have negative interest rates.
And they're doing QE. And that.
How's that going to help them? I mean, it may.
You're saying you're at the extremes of policy that you can get already.
That could fix or help. You needed some space. Yeah. Meaning higher interest rates so you can lower it to try to help.
Yeah.
888-99-CHART, this is Invest Talk. You know, I really hate tax time. It's so confusing. I wonder if anybody knows. I don't think there's anybody that can read the tax code. Because it's 10,000 pages. How are you going to know everything that's in it? You don't. You can't.
It's not easy.
Yeah.
That's why you need it. I think... People try to do, and if you have very basic, W-2 and you don't have a lot of write-offs, doing it on your own is fine. But I think you start getting a little more complex stuff. Yeah. I think an accountant's very important.
Yeah, he needs help.
Yep.
Let's start off with the second half hour by answering a question on 24-hour listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this is Jim in San Diego. I listen to your show on podcast. I listen to it daily, enjoy it very much. I was wondering what you guys thought about Activision Blizzard, ATVI, Alpha Tango, Victor India. And I was wondering if you could recommend a good buy point if you like the stock. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Okay, they are a publisher of interactive entertainment software, video games, peripheral products, consoles, handheld devices, that kind of thing. That's what they do. They are a almost $17 billion company. That is huge, okay, in this space. Mm-hmm. Okay, and they don't have the greatest sales numbers in the recent quarters, but they have picked up growth here a little bit. Mm-hmm. It looks like they've turned around a little bit on the earnings starting next year, down 16% this year to $1.19 a share and rebounding to $1.46 next year. And they have made money. It's constantly making money over the years. So from that point of view, it looks pretty good. As far as is it expensive, well, they're going to make $1.46. This is a $23.35 stock. So it's not cheap, and it's not also super expensive, but maybe it doesn't deserve to be expensive either.
Yeah, I mean, this is a business that is notoriously choppy when it comes to earnings. I mean, just look. 2008 made 73 cents a share. 2009 fell 4 cents to 69 cents a share. Then rose to $1.18 in 2012. Fell to 94 cents in 2013. And then up to $1.42 in last year. And then falling again this year. So it's very choppy. Very volatile. I don't think you can put a premium PE on this type of name because it is so volatile. Now, their cash flow is strong. Debt is not too high. I think overall it looks okay, but it's pretty. I would say it's pretty fairly valued, especially after this run from 18 and change up to 23 and change. You're gonna see a lot of resistance around $24 a share, and I think
it's not a good buy point.
Not a good buy point. I would buy it if it gets back down into the high teens. I think that's a good place to pick it up.
And then it starts to move up. Don't buy it as soon as it hits it. Wait till you see it turn sideways and start back up again that area. That's a much better buy place. ATVI, everybody. ATVI. Time for InvestTalk 101. You may have heard me tell a caller yesterday, you're not taking enough risk. He was a young guy, about 30 years old. And that's my opinion, of course. But why would I say that? Simply because risky investments generally pay off in the long run. They usually do very well in the stock market. being more risky, the potential for gain is higher. And when you're younger, you have lots of time to make up for any losses if we're wrong in the short term. So take more risk when you're younger. You can demand, as you're younger, you can demand a higher rate of return, and that, but you got to also take the risk to do that.
Yeah, and the reason is because risk versus reward. Over time, the more risk you take, the more reward you get. And as you're younger, when you're younger, you have time to recoup.
Yeah, and the older you start thinking about bonds and holding bonds to maturity, yeah. We kind of like that.
Because you don't have that long-term time horizon that risk will pay off over the long run, because you're not looking at the long run, you're looking at the short to medium term. And risky investments in the short to medium term can be very negative in returns.
And of course, you just don't take risks because you want to take risks. Yeah, you've got to manage the risks. It's got to be your homework.
Calculate a risk and know what type of risk you're taking. I think that's the biggest, I've said this before, biggest problem people have is they don't understand the type of risks that they are taking.
And that's InvestTalk 101. Is there a topic you'd want to know more about? Get in touch. We're here right now at 888-99-CHART. You can write me a note, write Justin a note. Go to contact Steve or contact Justin on InvestTalk.com.
It's a Saturday morning wealth conference that's now a webinar. Spend an hour with Steve and Justin and learn how to make the most of the changes in oil prices. It's coming up March 19th at 6:30 p.m. Pacific time, and you can sign up right now on investtalk.com, and it is free.
888-99-CHART. Let's go to James in New York. How you doing, James?
I'm good. Good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing good. Thanks for the call.
Excellent. Listen, I'm still shopping around for some small caps for my portfolio, and a couple names I come across wanted to know maybe if they're acceptable choices. One of them is K-Ball, K-B-A-L, and the other is O-M-E, Omega.
Well, let's look at Kimball International. I guess it's Kimball, K-I-M-B-A-L-L.
Yes,
K-B-A-L correct. Is the symbol. It is a very small company, 373 million market cap. So James, it's really tiny. Designs and manufactures furniture for office and hospitality industries. It's making money, has made money for years and years and years, but it's just making less money than it was a year ago and 2 years ago. Now, how bad has it been punished because of that? You know, it's down to what, $9.60?
Yeah, from a high last year, $15 a share.
So it looks like it's near or at its bottom and moving sideways and maybe gaining some strength for a breakup.
Yeah. I like a couple things about it. One is it pays a dividend, which is kind of rare for a small cap company, 2.1%. And it's trading below its book value.
And there's no debt.
No debt. 83. I think this is a good value. This to me would be a small cap value play. They're profitable, pay a dividend, cheap.
I kind of like it. You, Justin?
Yeah. The chart is not enticing because it has been kind of consolidating, but it does look like it could be creating a base to move higher. So I would give it a tentative thumbs up.
Yeah, me too. Me too, James. That's KBAL. Appreciate the call. That's James in New York. Listen, he's a podcast listener. And for all our podcast listeners, you can call us live 4 to 5 Pacific time anytime, like James. Or you can call anytime after the show, 24 hours a day, and just leave your question, and we'll get to it, I promise. So let's take a look at, you want to take a look at durable goods report that was out today? Mm-hmm. Durable goods report was out, and it was an increase, this is for January, an increase of 2.8%. And that is much better because last month it was down like 3%.
Yeah, December was not good.
So, wow, it was a big turnaround. However,
is that month over month or is that year over year?
Month over month.
Okay.
However, aircraft sales was up 129% for that month. Auto sales were down 2.9%. But if you take those two out, durable goods was still up, so that's still positive, but it was up 0.3% instead of 2.8%. Now, business investment was up 6%, so that was good. But core durable goods, which kind of tells you what the corporations are doing, for the last 4 months has been down 7%. So you had a little bit bump up in the recent month, but it's been pretty weak over core durable good.
So you're saying the trend is still probably slightly down?
Yes. It might be turning up, but 1 month does not make a trend.
Yeah, just like last month.
Yeah, so we have to wait. We're getting, remember we've talked about it before, we're decidedly down numbers for February, for looking back in January. The report's coming out in February. And this is also one that's kind of mixed. It's kind of good. You know, we've been a couple of mixed. We had a mixed housing report this week. So different housing reports, existing home sales versus new home sales. And everything's, you know, just kind of, it's not bad. It's not great. So that's what we're talking about, durable goods. And I don't know if you noticed, but the weekly unemployment claims kind of spiked up a little bit today. And that's a leading economic indicator, and that kind of makes it a little bit tough. I think it was like
313,000.
313,000. Yeah. And last week was 289 or so. So just something to be aware of. We just want to keep you aware of what's going on in our economy. We were speaking about risk on InvestTalk 101. Everyone has a different mindset about risk. There are those who welcome it and can deal with it and don't, you know, it doesn't really affect them as much. And then there's those who really, really can't afford the volatility, can't handle the volatility in the market. When you know what your risk score is, because we have a method to analyze how much risk you're taking, how much risk you want to take, and how much risk you're actually taking, that will help you determine what you should be doing. If you want to take the little short questionnaire, so that's just a few minutes. I mean, it's really short. Just go to investtalk.com, investtalk.com with two T's, and look for the blue box that says free risk analysis tool.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium Newsletter. It comes out each Friday, and one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
Hey, this is Chris from Mississippi. I listen to you every morning via iTunes podcast, and I got a question for you. Everybody's talking about Google and Apple. What about Samsung stock, SSNLF? I notice I can't really buy that through my Schwab account. At least it doesn't come up with that. And what do I have to do? Do I have to look for an ETF that's heavily weighted in Samsung or something like that? What do you think? Thanks. Bye.
Whenever you see an F at the end of a symbol like that, SNLF, F means foreign. It means it's a foreign company. And if it has to be an ADR, American Depository Receipt, to trade on our exchanges before you can buy it here in the United States. Doesn't mean you can't buy Samsung, but that means is you have to go to your broker, you go to the foreign desk, and you ask them, I need to buy something in the foreign market, and they can do it. It's just going to cost you an arm and a leg for the trade, so I wouldn't do it. Now, if you want exposure to Samsung, what, is Samsung in Japan?
No, it's a Korean.
Korean? You can buy a Korean ETF. Okay, and that might have probably one of the biggest holdings will be Samsung.
Yeah, and there are a lot of mutual funds out there. It looks like in our database right here, the biggest one I see percentage-wise is the Fidelity Series Emerging Markets. They own about 4% of their assets are in Samsung stock. So, but there are a lot of mutual funds that hold Samsung.
Yeah, there are. So you might want to look for a Korean ETF, which would be more specific. I don't know what the symbol is for it, but almost every country has an ETF. And look at the holdings.
I think it's EWY.
Korea?
Yeah, that's South Korea, yeah.
Yeah, okay. EWY. So EWY is a South Korean company. We're not recommending it. Please don't get me in trouble that we mentioned
well,
this.
It's an ETF. So yeah, we can talk about ETFs and mutual funds all we want.
Yeah, well, but we're not recommending it. You have to do your own homework. And Justin, real quick, is trying to figure out how
about
much.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, EWY. 21% of EWY is invested in Samsung.
There you go. You want to get Samsung? That's how you get it.
Yep.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. Let's talk about. So everybody's favorite car company, Tesla. And I, I'm There's an article that I read here, and it's pretty darn negative about Tesla. And I have said on the radio that I think Tesla is probably going to be a big auto company in the United States. I think they have the possibility of doing that. But right now, all they do is burn through money.
Yep.
Okay? They're not. The only reason they're successful, even at this point, and you can't really call them successful because they're not making money. But the only reason you can say they're successful is because they're backed by tax dollars, mm-hmm. your tax dollars.
Yeah, and based on GAAP earnings, they are profitable. But if you look at the amount of money they're burning to stay profitable, it's pretty massive.
And, you know, the multiples are at, like, tech stock multiples. Mm-hmm. And all they have is an automobile that runs on batteries. There's no new technology, something really...
It's put together well.
I think this is
my biggest issue with Tesla is that it's a good product. It's not profitable to make without government subsidies, and I'm not sure what that number is, but about
$10,000 per car.
Yeah, but after they sell a certain amount of cars, that subsidy goes away.
And
the big question is, if they start to dramatically grow their sales, that subsidy is going to go away. And if it continues, how can the government continue to afford to subsidize every car $10,000 if, you know, they get to the size of, you know, Toyota or Ford or whatever?
And at the same time, they're trying to go to the mass market part of the auto sales.
Yeah.
Okay, that's okay, we're good. But to get to that mass market, who are they going to compete with then?
Yeah.
See, it's going to be Toyota, it's going to be Ford. Do you realize that Toyota in a week sells more cars than Tesla does in a year? Mm-hmm. Two weeks for Ford.
And if you look at their operating margins, we're at about -4.5%. And their cars sell for anywhere from, let's call it an average, $80,000 to $100,000. And any traditional company that sells a car that high, their margins on the cars are very, very high.
Yeah.
They make a lot of money on them. So the big question is, how are they going to make a car? Their goal is to make a car for every man, right?
Yeah,
$30,000, $40,000. And those cars have much smaller margins, typically. So how are they going to increase their margins, still get positive margins in a car that's going to cost half as much as they cost today?
So Tesla has a lot of work cut out for you.
Yeah.
And it's the hype that's driven this price up. Hype.
Yeah. And if it wasn't for the easy, money-free, you know, 0% interest rates that they're borrowing at, it's be hard for them to survive.
Give us a call. This is Invest Talk.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Just one slip in entering information on your computer could end up costing you big. 10 common tax filing mistakes to avoid. That's our talking point next time. Be sure to join us on the next Invest Talk.
Your questions always come first, whether you have a stock or maybe a strategy, and you're always first at 888-99-CHART.
I have a question about a drilling company. It's Seadrill, S-D-R-L. Don't own it, but I've been watching it here for a while.
Seadrill provides offshore contract drilling and well services internationally through a fleet of 45 offshore drilling units. And the question is, has it been beat up enough? Okay, they made $8.30 a share in 2014. 2015, they're going to make $2.68. And then $2.52 next year.
And this is all because of lower oil prices.
That's right. So the rigs are going, the rig count is shrinking. No one wants to be drilling for oil because there's lots of it right now. And your question is Seadrill been beaten up enough? And is it a good buy?
Yeah, the biggest issue with Seadrill is that debt. They have a lot of debt. They're highly leveraged. And while they're still going to make money, technically, this year and next year, they're burning through a lot of cash to do that. So it's...
If they're going to succeed, in other words, if they can go get through this hump, then this is a great price. Yeah. Buy it now.
Like I said before with the previous caller, if oil can rebound into the $70, $80 range over the longer, you know, within a year or 2 years, Seadrill will survive and it'll probably be a great time to buy here. If oil stays down here in the $40 to $60 range or lower, I find it hard to see Seadrill really staying profitable and staying in business. And this is actually something which we're going to talk. We talked about our live conference last month up in the Bay Area, and we're going to talk about on the webinar coming up next next month. What are the costs for various types of drilling? And one of the higher costs are deep sea drilling, and that's what Seadrill does. They're a company that drills in the ocean, and that's notoriously a very higher cost endeavor, and that's why Seadrill might have trouble staying profitable at these lower oil prices.
You know, we look at not just the economic numbers here in the United States to see if our economy is going to survive. And why do I always talk about economies and our economy and foreign economies? Because remember, the strength of the economy growing grows earnings for the corporations, and that means the corporations' stock prices have a much better potential to go up. So you always want to look at, well, what is going to drive earnings or what is going to cause earnings to go down. Now, Japan's core consumer inflation slows further. Well, that means inflation is falling some more. Well, inflation, there's deflation in Europe. There's inflation and deflation, you know, we've talked about it earlier in the show, is a very big concern because...
Yeah. I mean, we're still in a deflationary force globally. That's the issue. Globally, we have a lot of deflationary forces because we amassed a lot of debt during the before the financial crisis, right? And that's we're trying to work off that debt.
And if we have deflation, working off that debt is going to be much harder.
We're deleveraging.
Yeah. Because think about it. If you have deflation, that means prices go down, and that means salaries go down. That means interest rates are falling. But we took this debt on at much higher interest rates.
And this is why. The entire world is in a big currency war because there's deflation everywhere, and the surest way to increase inflation, right, or stop deflation is to weaken your currency.
And so everybody's trying to start inflation. We have a target here of 2%. We're nowhere near 2%. Yeah. Japan has a target of 2% themselves.
Yeah, they've been trying to kickstart their inflation for 25 years.
Yeah. So what if we have a multi-year deflationary pulse for a long time? We have how many trillions of dollars in debt?
This is the biggest worry, is what happens when everybody's in deflation, the whole world's in deflation, and you can't...
Well, that's kind of what we have.
You can't... There's nowhere else to go. You're already at zero bound interest rates. Where else can you go to create more inflation? And that's really the worry. And that's why the Fed's trying to raise rates so they have some ammunition when we do hit deflation.
And raising rates in a deflationary cycle is very difficult. Yeah. Before we close for the hour, remember, if you're an employer who'd like to reduce the administrative overload associated with 401k programs, please ask us about our 401k solution. To find out more, just go to investtalk.com and click on the investment tab. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley with Justin Klein, and for everyone at KPP Financial, we thank you for listening today, and let's meet up again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.